Right, let's talk geopolitics now. The government summit in Dubai. One of the speakers is Dr. George Friedman. He's a geopolitical forecaster. He's the author of several best-selling books, including The Next 100 Years. He's also the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures. Tomorrow, he will be speaking at the government summit with a presentation titled Predicting the Future, The Next 100 Years, Exploring Scenarios for Government. And I'm delighted to say he's got up early and he's with us in the studio. Dr. Friedman, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Let's kick off with the 60-second summary of your presentation tomorrow. What's going to be the key takeaway that you're going to give to the audience?
Nations are going to be much more important than multinational organizations. As we see with the European Union, that is no longer clear how it's going to survive or when it's going to survive. But also the complex multilateral trade agreements that we have, such as TPP, which I have looked at carefully and have no idea what it says. These complex commitments by all countries to each other really haven't been working very well for most countries. So I think we're going to see the nation state far more important than it was.
I mean, we've had books written 20, 30 years ago about the death of the nation state, but you think that that's incorrect, that nations are going to remain as important entities? We've had other people talking about the rise of cities, and cities are going to be more important than nations going forward. But you think good old-fashioned countries have legs?
Well, there's a reason they have legs. These are people with a common history, a common language, a common culture. And as they found out during the crisis of the European Union, the Germans may have called themselves European, but they didn't really want to help the Greeks. So what a nation is you help whether or not you want to. Texas may not want to help New York, but that really doesn't matter. Texas is going to help New York. A treaty organization is simply two countries that will help each other if it's a good idea or a bad idea. And mostly it's been a bad idea, so I don't see what sustains multinationalism.
What does the world look like under the Donald Trump administration? Donald Trump as president, Rex Tillerson, a former oil man, as Secretary of State. What have you learned in the past 3 weeks?
I've learned, first, to pay no attention to tweets.
Okay.
Secondly, to pay no attention to public statements, which is always a good idea with politicians, because politicians don't really tell you very much. If you actually take a look at what Donald Trump has done, it's been fairly conservative and very much in keeping with what he said he was going to do. We've seen him moderate his position on China, shift his position somewhat on Japan, endorse sanctions against Russia. When we look around the table and push away everything that he said, he's doing what an American president can do. And on the one issue that's controversial, he's been stopped by the courts. So, it's easy to get excited about Donald Trump, easy to hate him. Everyone can play. But the fact of the matter is he's president of the United States and, like all good presidents, ignore what he says.
To what extent do you see President Trump as part of a trend for these more nationalistic leaders? I mean, Putin led the field early on, and then you've got the European Union, the UK leaving Brexit, and then obviously you've got the potential rise of Marine Le Pen in France. Do you see that trend continuing? Is that part of the reason why you see states as becoming more prominent?
Well, this period since 2008 has been a period in which the multinational entities have failed. I mean, Europe has been in what is really a depression since 2008, 8 years, and they can't fix it. The United States has grown because of its trade with China, but vast numbers of the lower middle class and middle class have been devastated. So the really good question is, how is this helping us? And a lot of people are coming to the conclusion that it really isn't helping us. And you always have to remember that the presidents and the prime ministers are elected by the people in these countries and not by their buddies at the meeting.
So if you're seeing the decline of the European Union, what do you see growing instead in that region? Do you see the powers from the East or powers from the South?
Europe is a dynamic, creative continent. It consists of 52 individual countries. Before World War II, it consisted of that many. After World War II, it consisted of that many. You will have these countries making the decisions they have to make on behalf of their people and working cooperatively wherever they can. But the idea that a group of people in Brussels whose name nobody knows, are going to be making fundamental decisions in the place of democracy. Remember, the foundation of liberalism is national self-determination, the right of a people to decide what they want to do, not the right of Brussels to do it. And this has become a worldwide trend. Not just in the United States, I want to add, in China, in Russia, in Japan as well, the leaders of these countries are doing what is in their country's best interest.
We're talking with Dr. George Friedman. He's a geopolitical forecaster, author of several best-selling books, including The Next 100 Years. He's a speaker at the government summit in Dubai. Let's talk about technology, because as well as looking at geopolitics and nations, you're also looking at some of the kind of fundamental social and technological shifts that are shaping the world. Demographics, space, but also technology. And tomorrow, you're going to focus on the microchip. Why?
The microchip is, I won't say obsolete, but is no longer driving the economy. The first consumer product appeared in 1970. It was a Hewlett-Packard calculator. Well, it's been almost 50 years since that happened. And in those 50 years, it has gotten to be just another commodity that we live with. Productivity in the world declined last year. It declined last year because new products are not coming on the line, and frankly, because people are sitting in the office doing Twitter. When you look at all of these things, we are now going into the trough we usually go into, and that trough will be a period of low innovation, high rhetoric about innovation, and then we'll get out of it.
You say that there is some kind of precedent for this, these sort of sweeping arcs of history. What is the precedent for this trough?
Well, if you take a look at the automobile, in 1915, Henry Ford opened a factory. In 1965, it was a very important part of our lives. But very little new was going to happen. They made the fins look different and the colors look different. It became a commodity and anybody could do it. We're now 50 years into the microchip age. It is not a new cutting-edge technology, but in the same way that everybody got wildly excited about the automobile, they get wildly excited about the new product that appears. However, productivity is falling all over the world, so we badly need a new range of technologies to emerge, and unfortunately, we won't know what that will be until the next richest man in the world emerges.
Well, there's a lot of excitement from one of your fellow speakers this week. Klaus Schwab, for example, is here from the World Economic Forum, and famously last year he coined the phrase the fourth industrial revolution. He thinks there are massively game-changing technologies. He talks about things like artificial intelligence. He talks about things like 3D printing. And he talks about augmented reality. He thinks these are super-duper game changers. Are you not quite so convinced of their seriousness?
Well, to have artificial intelligence, artificial anything, you have to know how the real thing works. We don't know how we think. We cannot create an analog of how we think because we don't understand it. You can get smarter computers, and that'll make a difference. 3D printing, I have been hearing, it will transform the world for 20 years now. I'm definitely standing by. I'm not saying that these things won't change, but I know that the person who really understands what's coming next isn't appearing at this conference and telling you about it. He's out there building it.
So Elon Musk is not that person. Travis Kalanick of Uber is not that person.
Elon Musk is an interesting person. He's taken very old technologies like rocket ships, like cars, and he's adding things to them. And those are important things. But what happened with the microchip is it changed the way information was exchanged. From music to data on health, it transformed everything. Nothing that Musk is going to do is going to transform everything. It's very nice if I don't have to drive, but I still am in a car going up somewhere.
We've had a couple of questions in. Emil writes in, please ask Dr. Friedman his view on the future of the African continent. It's a broad-based question, your thesis on Africa.
My thesis on Africa is that until South Africa gets its act together, goes beyond President Zuma, goes to the generation that can build, South Africa will not evolve. Every continent needs a driver, North America's driver, the United States. The driver of Africa, of sub-Saharan Africa, should be South Africa. It has come through a terrible time, but now it is time that it take the incredible culture embedded in the country to build it. If it doesn't build it, South Africa will not drive the continent, and the continent will not develop.
A question about Turkey. No name on this one. But Turkey, I know, is one of the three emerging Eurasian powers that you write about in the book, The Next 100 Years. Turkey, Poland and Japan are the three countries that you single out as being superpowers for the 21st century. And yet a question coming in about Turkey suggests that in recent years, Turkey's gone backwards under President Erdogan.
Well, I don't know what forward looks like. What it's doing, however, is having massive instability. But please remember that the United States had a civil war ending in 1865, in which 600,000 people died. No one would have thought that by 1900, the United States would be producing half the industrial goods in the world. The fact that there's instability sometimes means you're going to collapse, sometimes means that you are clearing the ground for the future, as ugly as it appears. So, in the case of the United States, we would have never become what we are without the Civil War. And I suspect that what's happening in Turkey is the same ground clearing operation.
Let's talk about demographics. You say low birth rates are going to be a game changer this century. Explain that.
We have lived with high birth rates for the past 300 years. Land prices have always risen. There's always been surplus population, so capital has had the advantage. You know, there's lots of people who wanted to work. We're now entering a period where having multiple children makes no sense for a woman, because in an agricultural society, having 10 kids is wonderful. They can go to work. In New York City, or probably Dubai, it is a financial catastrophe to have 10 kids. You can manage with one. If you're going to keep having fewer people, that also means they become more valuable. So the entire structure of business, land, labor, and capital, land becomes less expensive, capital becomes cheap, which it is, and labor's, its price, is going to keep rising higher and higher, particularly that labor which is able to drive the economy forward through innovation.
So finally, we've got about a minute left. What does that mean? Perhaps not for my generation or your generation or George's generation, but for our kids. Georgia and I both have children, you know, under the age of 10. Taking all of your analysis of what the next 100 years holds, and they're going to live through most of it, what should they be doing with their education for the next 20 years to prepare themselves for that?
Well, first they should study war, because in every century there is war, and this is not going to be any different. Secondly, they should be trying to identify the emerging technology. That is one of the most difficult things to do, because there isn't a PR company in the world isn't pushing marketing some definitive culture. We just don't know what's going to be.
If it's Lego, my kids are absolutely fine.
Exactly.
They're going to rule the world.
They're going to have to live their lives like everybody else did. They're going to have to get married or not married and reproduce. And they're going to have to fall in love and out of love. And they're going to have to take enormous risks with their lives, and they're going to be in a century like any other. We're all waiting for the millennium to come, and it's not coming. We're all waiting for that moment where we don't have to take risks in our lives, make guesses on people, go off to war. The 21st century is just another century, and will be followed by another one just like it.
Dr. George Friedman, it's been fascinating talking to you. Really appreciate you joining us this morning. Geopolitical forecaster, author of several best-selling books, including The Next 100 Years, speaking at the Government Summit in Dubai. Thanks for getting up early to speak to us today.